Oh, we're live?
Live?
All right. Man, just looking at you sitting here at this table is just like, to me, is one of those moments of like I've listened to like one of the best people like who could possibly interview people like so often. And then I just come up and talk with comics and like, and now you're sitting at this table and it's just like, it's Ryan, I know you've been here and we're friendly, but to have you here is like a real honor.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah. I'm flattered and grateful, and I appreciate it. You got a great club here. You're doing all the right stuff here. This is a great fucking club. You actually really care. You actually really look into it. You actually really are proactive. You're pro making this work together. A lot of clubs do not do that. They also don't know how to do that. So kudos to you.
Just got to run ads. You just got to run it. Ads.
Really?
But
it's so easy. it's so easy.
Tell people someone's coming.
It's so easy.
On both sides.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You, as far as that, I know it's been a breeze working, you know, as far as collaborating, posting, ads, mutual. It's and the weekend's great. I mean, we're, you know, just multiple sold out shows. And but I want to talk about the way you interview. Honeydew really is, and you have a new show with your brothers, which I'm sure is probably exciting for you.
Well, it's just a little, it's not a new show, it's still the way back, but just a little spin on it with them
as the co-host.
As a few, no, they're just guests for a few episodes and stuff. Okay. You know, I went back in the summer to throw out the first pitch at the Orioles game, and people, since I've been podcasting in 2012, like, you gotta get your brothers, and they're not coming to California, and they also don't want to do the Honeydew, but they'll get nostalgic with me. And so I was like, all right, this is what we're gonna do. So they came up to the city and we sat in my buddy's junkyard and we just did episodes of the way back with probably got about 2 months worth of episodes. So it's still part of the same show, but it's like a little mini series within the show. It's not something I'm gonna keep going, but I'm gonna try to get more, you know, as we go along, but not sometime.
I want to call you out on the way, because of the way you interview people, and I noticed that you have an exceptional gift to ask the questions between the words, like in a way that you'll stop and you'll ask, what was this person's emotion or what was going through their head while this moment is happening? And you really find the other, you find the other side of the story, you know. And how much preparation, first the mind to be able to do that, is it's wonderful, and you see it in your storytelling on stage. But it really does take a different way of thinking to be able to even think of those questions.
Well, that's, again, thank you. I don't prep too much on purpose. I kind of want to be, so some people be like, you should do your research. You didn't know that. No, I didn't. Cause I want to be, so I don't want to act, you know, I'm not good at that. Right. So for example, I'll usually do a quick Google on everyone. I had Kevin Nealon on, and as the time we're recording, it hasn't dropped, but it's coming. It's a great episode, but I Googled and it said that he had a 12-year-old brother who was murdered. So I was like, maybe he'll want to talk about that. But I also know the internet's full of shit a lot. So I always ask every guest, hey. And he said, no, that's not true at all. And I was like, yeah, but are you fucking with me right now? And he's like, it's not. I go, come on, are you going to hit me at the end of the episode with like, I don't. He's like, it's not true at all. I said, I'm going to show you. It's on there. He goes, that's wild. So that's the other reason I try not to do too much too, because I'm like, oh, I just have 20 questions about your murdered brother, right? And that doesn't even exist. So the big thing for me, honestly, the truth, Dustin, is listening. You listen. I'm not thinking about other shit over there or here or what I'm doing. I'm really, for an hour, I'm sitting and listening to this person. And I also find through the years that, like, you can tell me who you are and you can puff your chest out all bravado, but who were you really in that moment? Because that's who you are. Were you scared? That's what I'm saying. Were you crying? Were you, when you were locked up in the back of that cop car, were you crying? Were you kicking the fucking seats? Like, that's who you are in those moments is really what I like to get into.
Do you have your guests on the Honeydew prepare their stories ahead of time? Do you ask them to bring a new story?
I do ask them to submit just, you know, log lines. I don't want you to go too deep on it. Like, you know, my mother's cancer or I was adopted or whatever. So we try to get that. All the guests don't do it. So, you know, they're comics. So then they'll come in and some of them are like, we'll just talk about whatever. And I'm like, no, we're not going to just talk about whatever. That's why this podcast is still going, because we're not just talking about whatever. But, yeah, I try to get a little bit of info before they come in.
When did you start podcasting?
Started in, I just looked this up. I would say like 2011, 2012, with the Crab Feast. And there was an initial version that then became a version with Jay Larson and I, and we did that for 7.5 years. So at the end of 2018, December 2018, the Crab Feast ends, and then January, the next week, January, begins, 2019 begins the Honeydew. So that one's 7 years.
It started in January of 19. Mm-hmm.
It's the Honeydew.
It's like right after we open. Like,
yeah.
Almost the exact same.
Yep. And for the first year with the Honeydew, I'm on the YMH network.
Did COVID shut you down too? No.
No. We were considered, what was it, necessary. Well, I can't remember the word they used for us, like nurses and shit. We were allowed to bring news to you and shit. So, yeah. But I was with Tom and Christina's YMH network for the first year. And then they all went to Austin. And then I just stayed in LA and now I'm on my own doing it.
And you're doing, it really is one of my favorite shows, the guests, the comics, the stories behind the storytellers, and you on stage you tell amazing stories. I mean, you bring that, so stories are really like, that really is, that encompasses a lot of what you present and deliver at the same time.
Yeah, I am definitely not a Anthony Jeselnik, Stephen Wright style comedian. I am it is harder for me to do shorter sets. Like back in the day when people were like, you got to do a quick five. I'm like, fuck, my setups take five. You know what I mean? Shit like that. It's harder for me. Earlier on, people get nervous to do longer sets, maybe because they don't have the material. But I would get nervous to do shorter sets because I'm like, shit, what am I cutting out of that tonight? You know, what can I still pull out? And then honestly, those exercises along the way help you trim fat and stuff. Because you're like, I didn't fucking need it. You know,
you came out tonight and you told a story about a driver you had.
From here. Not just the driver I had.
Right.
The guy I had last time I was here, yeah.
And you start going, I gave a cackle in the back. Like, because before, as soon as you said, all you had to say was the last time I was here. And I'm like, oh, fuck, I know where he's going.
Yeah.
And the next thing I know, I'm like, bro, he's been on stage 20 minutes and he's still talking and he's just wrapping up with the driver and just murder it.
Was it 20 minutes? I got it. That's what I'm talking about. I got to trim the fat out of that story.
No, it was all like 15 maybe, like, but it was, they were with you the entire way. And it's just such a journey to be able to do that. It really is.
It's also it's nerve wracking as well when you're a storyteller, because you know you want to try to find some beats and check in every, you know, let's let them make sure there's humor coming in. You know,
you see people crumble without laughter. Like,
well, that's what I'm saying. Quickly. I started doing it. Well, I didn't do it intentionally. I started telling a long story. I'm like, oh, fuck.
Like, it makes me think of the faith, because I see, you know, we have 30, 40 comics a week at our open mic plus every. I mean, so I see, like, the best in the beginning all the time. And, like, I hear you talking about going 8 minutes without laughs, and I think about the face of an open micer who, like, crumbles after not getting one, or then two, and then three, and they're like, well, I guess I'm going to get out of here, guys. Like, you just... It's
terrifying because you don't know. You have no idea if you're going to fucking hit. And if you don't hit, guess what? You're fucked. And I have definitely not hit before. Plenty of time.
No, guys, I know where I'm going.
Trust me. Just hang in, guys. Yeah, but if you can keep it interesting, you know, if you can get them riveted, there's other ways to tell stories that aren't just humorous to bang, 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 bang. I do those versions as well. Try to hit quick hitters in there and use my metaphors and similes and hyperbole. Yeah. And
Are you a writer? Do you write? You write on stage?
I do both. I will think of an idea. I'll sort of put it down. I mentioned it tonight on stage. I find myself my most creative just as I'm slipping into sleep. And I'll start thinking of things and bang, bang, bang. So I grab my phone. I put it. I used to have an old recorder, the micro cassette. I used to put that in there. I used to call my answering machine before that.
Oh, my God.
And leave it on there so I wouldn't forget, because you think you're going to remember tomorrow. You ain't fucking remembering tomorrow. You remember you had something to remember, and you can't fucking remember. And I once
calling
heard Chris
your
Rock.
Answering machine. That's yep. So funny.
And I was so pleased with myself because I had been doing that for years. I'm like, talk about this. Or hey, I would always say, hey, it's me. Talk about this. Talk about this. And I'd go home and I'd hear it. I have like 7 or 8 ideas on there. And then I once heard Chris Rock years later say that he would do the same thing. And he's right. He said, like, the first time you say something, it's usually the truest you're ever going to say it. And then the art of stand-up is saying that again and again, as if it's the first time you ever thought of it or said it, and finding the cadence where it truly came out naturally again and again and again is part of the art of doing it this way. So I would leave that and I'd hear how I said it, and I'm like, okay, great, match that. Different when you read it, you know.
'Cause for like joke formula, setup, punch. How much of that goes into storytelling?
For me, I mean, and there's different storytellers, of course, but setup punch, I don't know if it's setup punch more than it's premise punch in storytelling. Like, I'm going to tell you about this, and I don't know that there really needs to be it could be a little setup punch throughout there. Like, for example, I say, I can't tell you how great this guy started. You know, that's a bit of a setup, you know, but I wouldn't call it like I guess it is a traditional setup. So
just working your way to it, because
that's the other thing is, I don't mean to interrupt, but I enjoy the art of that, because a year from now, that story's not going to be that long. It'll be much tighter. So it's fun to know that this is my blueprint. And I'm going to hit this beat, this one, this one, this one, this one. But in between those notes, I'm going to fucking play around and see what comes out of that. That's how I write. So we'll jot some things down, but I do not sit there and I can't.
Every punchline. Mm-mm. No.
No. And a lot of them come from an audience reaction to, or something some might say. I'm like, oh, that's fucking great.
So you draw a map to the key points of the story that you want to follow. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much what you take.
Yep. Okay. I would say that's a fair assessment. Yes.
Okay. Yep.
I give myself a point A and a point Z, and there's a few other points in between. But other than that, maybe we're going left and right this time. Maybe we're going right and left that time. Maybe we're going up and down this time.
I mean, writing on stage is something that can take years to be able to do. I mean, for some people too, you know, I think the idea of like going up with no material at first when you're a younger comic, you know, is you're like, I'm going to write it this, then you think everything has to be a certain way. And then you realize that like maybe you hit a point you're funnier than your material. So then that's kind of the point that you're like, well, we're just going to go up and talk about it. Mm-hmm. That kind of that early growth there. But to be able to write, I know it's a craft, and I know some people do very well at it.
Well, another thing I used to do too, and I think it might have been, I don't know if it was Chappelle, I can't remember the comedian, said they did this to, and I was like, fuck yeah, it might have been Chris Rock again. But I used to have my set, and then I'd have what I was my best, my closer at the end, the thing that I know is going to get fucking laughs. After a while, I would be like, I need new material. So I would purposely start with my closer. Now, it's either sink or fucking swim. So if I'm starting with what I consider my best, I got to outright and go up. So that started making me a stronger writer and storyteller too. Like, well, and then I'd have four or five stories, and then I'm saying, all right, well, let's put these in an order, because I do enjoy a through line through things, and I do appreciate, you know, bridging us to the next story and not just coldly going into something else. I like to write and bridge and connect that way too.
Do you write? How often do you actually find yourself writing? Are you like a note?
Notes everything. And voice memos, nonstop. And then after a while, I'll sit down and I'll start listening to those, and I'll start writing some things in my notepad, and I'll say, okay, I like that. That could go here with this. This could be this. This could be this. Start putting some existing pieces together with new ones, and I'm like, okay, this is a good outline. Let's try that, that, that. Oh, this could tie into, you know, like I have a note in my phone that when I tell the UPS gun story that Ace had his gun last time and things like that. So I make notes of that in my thing. I'm like, oh, you can put the Ace gun story right here.
Dude, are you talking about the driver all over the country?
Yeah.
Are you?
Yeah, dude. I don't name your club as the club that did it,
it's
but
all right.
It's definitely talking about that guy was insane. That was insane. To be like, what the fuck's going on?
Is that is that story compiled of different driving experience?
No, ask that's Hannah. All that one. Was the one ride
Bro,
we had coming here.
So amazing.
That was the one ride we had coming here.
I looked over, she's not there. I look this way, she's getting in the car. I'm like, bro, this is
that's. You can ask her, and then, boom, it gets into the conversation. I'm like, you're a bank robber? Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. That's so funny.
My ride to work, dude.
Like, when you...
Those are parts that I come up with. There's a great line, for example. I say, this is my ride to work. That comes... just out of, you know, getting up and performing and repetition over and over again, and things start to come out of you naturally. So that's a line that came. I would say I didn't write that.
The first time I when I found out what happened in that car, I think was like your first night on stage or something.
Mm-hmm.
Because you just go up and you start talking about it. And like, as funny as it is, I'm in the back of the room going, please tell me this is not my driver. Please tell me.
Your driver is a former bank robber, bro. Just so you know.
I don't. My former driver.
Robbed multiple banks.
Hold on a second. I'm going to clear. My former driver is a former bank robber. Which I found out from your comedy.
Yeah, and I found out directly from him when he was driving me here. And I was like, what?
Please don't fire him.
Don't tell him I said shit.
We haven't worked. That wasn't, I don't remember. That's not, but we haven't worked with him in a while. I don't remember.
I don't blame you.
But
I don't blame you.
But my God. And then you're like, nope, that's real.
I'm telling it again tonight when we go back down there. Yeah. That was my first Kansas City comedy experience. That's how I got here.
Welcome to Kansas City.
Yeah, bro.
Is that going in a special? Is that going to be?
We'll see. We'll see what happens. I don't know about specials anymore. There's 365 of them a year. I don't know what that even is anymore, a special. So
you were talking about that.
We'll see.
Downstairs
we'll
see. A little bit.
Yeah.
Do you think they don't mean as much?
They definitely don't mean as much. No.
Whether it's on, like, it doesn't matter the platform, if it's on a streaming service or YouTube or...
Well, on any of the services, they'll tell you. I just had a conversation with Apple, too. Podcast comedy is just, like, it's the shit. It's the redheaded stepchild of everything. You know, Comedy Central used to put the hour on at midnight, like 11 to midnight or whatever. And we would be, not we, because I never got one, but comedians would be like, why are you putting something I work so hard on at this time of night when no one's going to fucking see it? And the reason is because the business side is stand-up is the lowest viewed programming on our network. So we're going to put it at the worst fucking time slot because no one's watching it anyway, right? And then... they get rid of stand up and they say, you know, we need a show at midnight. And so At Midnight is born. At Midnight was created to take that fucking slot because it already wasn't doing shit. And that's cheaper to do than stand up specials. So At Midnight gets born for that. When you look at Netflix, comedy's the bottom rung for them too. You know, everything is, you know, murder, mystery, drama, crime, thriller, you know, that sort of shit. That's what the number one thing is. Comedy's not a big deal. YouTube, we throw it up on YouTube. Across Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, YouTube, there's 365 specials a year. Do you think podcasts are special anymore? No, everybody's got one. They're not special. Same thing with what we're calling specials. So not that I'm shitting on the idea of it, but what I'm saying is, as a comedian, what's next? We can't all just keep rinsing and repeating. We can't. What's next? I don't know what that is for me, but shooting in a junkyard and doing something different with my content that I have to say, I don't know if there's another comedian on planet Earth right now doing content in a junkyard. Okay. I don't know. I doubt it. I highly doubt it. But trying something different than just going out on the road for whatever, a couple of years, shooting a special, throwing it up there to be demonetized or just another one that's out there and people can't get to it because there's so much fucking shit out there. You know, so I don't know if that model is something that's beneficial moving forward.
In the sense that it's not gathering, it's not gaining you new followers and it's just burning material, or?
Well, it gains you some followers and some things like that, depending on what level you're on too. You know, I'm not on Chappelle level or anything, so it can help. But what I'm saying is, as a comedian, like, doing that again and again when everyone's doing that, to me, is madness.
Like, what else can you do?
Yeah. And also, after a while, you get tired of doing shit. You know, outside of the gazillions of dollars the Rolling Stones have made, I don't know how the fuck they can still get energy to sing Satisfaction. You know what I'm saying? 60 years of that fucking song, and you're still dancing around. You must be making a fuckload.
He's still looking for Satisfaction.
Yeah, dude.
He can't get it.
He ain't ever getting it.
Never going to get it.
Never going to get it. But if there are 360, if there used to, you know, George Carlin used to be the most prolific writer, at least one of them, in this art form. And it was two and a half years. Now they're fucking every 6 months a comedian's got a new one. And if you really look at the quality of comedy over those years, it's definitely gone down. And that's not to say that people are bad, but they're turning it quicker and not maybe going out a little longer and developing it more. And they're just turning and burning because it's got to be a year for some reason. Because Louis fucking one time said a year, and now everybody's like, I got to do it every year. Like, okay. But if there's 365, this might even be more. I'm telling you, it's one a day. I don't know. If you're going to try to stand out,
I mean, there's thousands and thousands of comedians. So you're probably not far off on that. Somebody's releasing something, calling it a special probably every single day.
Absolutely. And some people, and no disrespect to them either, I'm just saying, like, some people do crowd work specials. So you could decide to do a crowd work special every 3 months if you wanted. You know what I mean? Like, there's so much content now.
Could that be maybe because there's so much content that people are getting so trained for short attention span? Things are so quick and moving so quick that if you don't have something new to put out, like, you can take a special and circulate that in new content for a very long time.
Yeah. You can chop it up and
chop it up
into shorts and all these things because of that.
Right.
And yes, you're right. That is what it is. It's the short form. So there was just this
interview with Matt Damon. Go ahead.
Well, he was just saying, like, he had a meeting, I believe it was with Netflix, and they're telling him, hey, like, can we dial it back on plot and shit like that? We want content for people who are scrolling here and looking here. We don't want.
Holy shit.
People aren't doing it. People aren't paying attention to the twists and the turns in the story anymore. They want mindless content back there so people can watch like this. And I was just like, wow. Yeah, we're training ourselves to to look at short form content and multiple screens at once where you're really not fucking paying that much. You didn't know, you didn't hear what they just said, what that dude's name is, who shot that lady, you know.
One of the most physically exhausting nights of my life was where they offered a split screen of a Chiefs and Royals playoff game at the exact same time. And you just jump back and forth and you can highlight the one with the sound.
No.
Bro, my mom, that's how we watched it. Friends over, my mom. And we would go live sometime, but the, because it's,
yeah,
they're both in the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, and it was, it's too much. I can't do that split screen stuff. I don't want it. I don't need the multiple. I have two monitors for work. I don't need three for a TV. I don't want that. But I do think the way the industry is going, it makes more sense for people today, I think, to want to put out more content.
Mm-hmm.
But I do agree that it comes fast. But I think that that's what people know, and so they're going to keep going back to that, right? You know.
And what I'm saying is you definitely still need the 60 minutes of content. What is that moving for?
What do you do with it?
How do we get original and different and make it stand out among a sea of other specials?
So then we're not even releasing specials. We're releasing 60 to minute to 3 minute clips at a time. But that's what it's.
I think a lot of people are going to start shooting content that way, so it's even easier to edit. You know, I'm just going to give you a quick. And you know, the other thing is too, you got to make money with this shit. So you're, it depends on where you're working. YouTube, you need 8 minutes minimum to put ads in a clip. So that's why you see, you know, that then these damn networks start dictating how we fucking get content. Well, you want to make money, it's got to be 8 minutes or more to put ads in it like this. Shorts will make you money, but they pay out at a different rate and to do different shit. And you're like, what the fuck are we talking about here? So then you just got to start. I'll say this lastly, because the thing that I genuinely, all of this under the umbrella, is that these networks, these apps, they're gamifying everything. That's the part I don't like. Hey, you know that special you just put out? You got to chop it up into pieces. You got to change the name on it and title on it different ways. Try A/B testing thumbnails. And then once you figure out what starts going, then you hit it like that. And it's like, what the fuck? I'm a comedian. I have 60 minutes of fucking content I'd like to put up here. End of story. I don't want to fucking get Instagram will say, oh, if you do two more posts, you'll get a badge. I don't want a badge. I don't want to fucking play your goddamn game. And what is happening, I believe, is that these apps and networks want to keep you there. I don't want you leaving Instagram to go to Facebook or wherever. I want you staying right here. So let me incentivize you by earning badges. And, oh, that post will get shown a little more. And if you do this, I'm over that. That's what the fuck I'm over. I'm over having to gamify content and art for these fucking networks. That's maddening. And they change and move the goalposts nonstop. It's great talking to you, bro. We got some motherfucking Rangoon downstairs.
Well, we're going to gamify the shit out of this.
Go ahead. Chop it up. Clip it out. Do what you have to do with it.
We're going
to
do it.
Yeah, but pay somebody else. That's what I do. I don't want to do it anymore. I don't want to do it. I don't like the game. Like, I don't like the fucking game it's become.
It's tired, right?
It's tiring. And so since we're in this rat race and in this wheel, it's like, all right, what can we do to fucking make this old game feel a little new and fresh? And someone will figure that out, or we'll do it or whatever, and then everyone does that. You've got a wonderful idea. Okay, but after everybody abuses that, it's like, what are we going to do next?
Rip it apart.
It's always, what's next?
You like that idea, huh?
I love that idea. I was stoked hearing Mick just talk about it. I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Such a variety. I don't want to say too much, but yeah, fucking great idea.
It's a great show, man.
I'll bet.
The energy is just through the roof every time. Just, I'm telling you, 25 years in the industry, I've never... I mean, the constant chanting, the fun, it can get raunchy. It can be clean. It can smart, stupid. And it's just, it just celebrates every aspect of comedy.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely great.
You're great. Let's, all right. Well, thank you. Where can they find you?
Ryan Sickler on all social media, ryansickler.com, the Honeydew podcast, the Way Back, the Honeydew with Y'all, the Crab Feast, Live and Alive, Lefty Sun, all that.
And in a town near you, thanks for listening. Subscribe. See you next week. Bye.